Hello, and welcome to virtual.
I go through this presentation, but.
And on the TSXV under the symbol GMIN. Welcome, Deshaun.
Thank you, John. And OTC, thank you for hosting us again this year. It's a pleasure to present our company to you again and to tell you about the updates that we've made and the progress that we've done this year. So to kick it off, what I have listed here is a set of investment highlights that I'll be walking you through in detail as I go through this presentation. But if I can set the table and provide an overview before I go into them in detail, G Mining Ventures Corp is a fully funded gold developer currently building what will be Brazil's third largest gold mine. Our project is called Tocantinzinho, or TZ, and it is slated to achieve commercial production in the second half of next year. It is engineered to produce 175,000 ounces of gold a year for 10 and a half years at a $681 all-in sustaining cash cost. Now, before I talk about the project, what I'd like to run through is what makes our company unique and really what is our competitive advantage, not just amongst the other developers, but what we believe is essentially a competitive advantage for the mining sector in general. What sets us apart is our ability to execute on projects on time and on budget using our own in-house team. Our company is founded by the principles of G Mining Services, which is a private, family-owned engineering business that over the last 15 years has built three world-class assets for some of the largest mining companies in the world, each coming in on time and on budget. Those projects include IAMGOLD's Essakane mine in Burkina Faso, Newmont Corporation's Merian Mine in Suriname, and most recently, Lundin Gold's Fruta del Norte project in Ecuador. Now, what is our secret sauce? How do we manage to complete our projects on time and on budget? Well, it's pretty simple. Most mining companies, when they look to execute on projects, they hire an EPCM, which is really a contractor who will deliver a certain part of the project, but then also subcontract out many other scopes of the project to a group of other service providers, each having their own profit margins, their own incentives, and really their own view of trying to maximize their bottom line. We, on the other hand, perform every single function of the project build in-house using our own integrated team. If you've ever renovated your home, you know what it's like to manage a slew of different contractors. For us, if I can use Lundin Gold as an example, when they hire G Mining Services, what we do is we transplant a full in-house team to the payroll of Lundin Gold for the duration of the project. This gives us every single vertical that we need to finish a project, removing a slew of contractors and their profit margins, and giving us full control and flexibility to build a project rather than manage seven or eight different contracts that have very unique and specific scopes. We do our own engineering, procurement, all of the purchasing, all of the training, and we also transition the team from construction into operations before the team transitions back into the services business to work in the next project. But I digress. To bring it back to the projects the team has built, each of these mines here last year produced over 400,000 ounces of gold at a sub-$1,000 sustaining cash cost. So after generating over $1 billion and helping for our clients, and helping create shareholder value from them. In 2020, we formed G Mining Ventures with the goal of doing it ourselves for our shareholders. What's our long-term vision? It is to use this platform to build the next intermediate gold producer, one that will produce over 500,000 ounces over the next 5 years. And we're starting with our Brazilian project, which we acquired 2 years ago. So since going public in October 2020, what we did is we raised about $43 million to go look for a project. We acquired TZ a year later in October 2021 for $115 million from Eldorado Gold. From there, we went to work. 4 months later, we published a new feasibility study and then used that feasibility study to close a $481 million project financing last July. We made a construction decision in September 2022. And at this point, we are roughly 51% of the project done and on track to achieve commercial production in the second half of next year. So in a span of less than 2 years, we went from forming a company to being a fully financed project in construction and are now less than a year out from being in commercial production. At this point, we're also looking to resume our search and look to find in the second asset to create that pipeline and to help push our company towards that intermediate status. The other factor that sets our company apart is really our access to capital. So when we raised our project financing, you know, we were a company that had a market cap of about 200-ish million, and we successfully raised over $480 million US. We were primarily banked by Franco-Nevada, who provided a stream for $250 million, a term loan for $75 million, and then also bought 9.9% equity in the company. La Mancha is our strategic investor. They're a big family office out of London that acquired 25% of the company. In El Dorado, the group that we bought the project from, decided to keep their pro rata interest, invested $20-ish million US, with the balance of the proceeds coming from equipment financing to build our project. I will note that this equity financing was done at a 23% premium to market, really telling us that we have the right partners in place that share our vision to continue to grow this business. A little bit about Brazil. As I mentioned, once the project is done, TZ, it will be the third largest primary gold mine in Brazil next year. We really like Brazil as a jurisdiction and feel that it is the best in South America at this point. We also like the type of environment that the project's in, which is relatively remote with high rainfall, as we've executed on four projects in the same region. When we bought the project, it was fully permitted. The government is very supportive for mining investments, where, for example, we qualify for a 10-year tax incentive, where for that 10-year period, we have a 75% reduction to our income taxes. This brings our tax rate effectively to around 12-13% relative to somewhere in the mid-30s. Lastly, Brazil is a country that's mostly powered by hydro and renewable energy. So we are building a power line that will connect to our project, giving us largely, call it 80% or so renewable power that will be generated to power the project, giving us a very low carbon footprint in order to operate our project for the 10 and a half years. So to provide you a little bit more details about the project itself, when we acquired the project, it benefited from two historical feasibility studies done by Eldorado Gold. When we took it over, we decided to re-engineer the project and really look to optimize it to some features, but also at the same time update the cost estimates, because the cost estimates in 2019, when the previous study was done, in 2022 were very different. So what we designed is a very simple operation. It's a single open pit with a conventional 12,600 ton per day plant. It's a CIL, which will overall cost $458 million, and it will generate a $622 million NPV using a $1,600 gold price. This translates into a 24% IRR, and overall, the production profile is roughly 175,000 ounces of gold a year for 10 and a half years at a $681 all-in sustaining cash cost. The first 5 years, production is actually front-end loaded, where we're generating just shy of 200,000 ounces of gold a year. It's a simple project, a strip ratio of 3.4, grade of 1.31, and as I mentioned, a relatively attractive all-in sustaining cash cost. In terms of the leverage to gold, an easy way to think about it is for every $100 change in the gold price, it results in roughly $100-ish million change in the NPV after tax. So where gold price is today, we're talking roughly $950 to about $1 billion in after tax NPV. The project that we inherited only had about 83,000 meters of drilling, but that resulted in a 2 million ounce reserve at a 1.31 gram per ton gold grade. We convert about 97% of that resource into the reserve, so which only leaves about 300,000 ounces or so in the inferred category. However, with the lack of drilling that's been on the property and a land package that spans 996 square kilometers, we do see a lot of prospectivity in the region for additional exploration upside. You can see on this map, there's a southeast-northwest facing trend, in a parallel trend just 15 kilometers away. Because the land package is essentially underexplored, we're focusing this year and next year on earlier stage exploration work, such as trenching, updated geophysics, and soil sampling in order to find additional exploration targets so that once we're in commercial production next year and generating cash flow, we can then fund that additional exploration with cash flow rather than through expensive equity at this stage. To date, as of the numbers that we're showing here are as of the end of August, the overall project progress has reached 51%. This includes 46% on the construction, and most of the earthworks have actually been finished. This is what the site essentially looks like after approximately 12-ish months of work. Detailed engineering is complete, especially for all of the major parts for the process plant, mining, earthworks were done earlier, and even our feasibility study had effectively 15% detailed engineering going into it as we were planning to execute on that as soon as our funding was put in place. Mm-hmm. Procurement at this stage is also effectively complete. Total expenditures to date are $281 million, so 61% of total. And total commitments are $363 million, so roughly 80% are done. The balance of the spend between now and commercial production next year is really effectively labor and pushing the project forward. All mining equipment has arrived on site. This would be an owner-operated operation. And this is very important for us because what we'd like to do is essentially have about 6 months of stockpiles ready and completed on surface of ore when we start our commissioning. The other thing in terms of how we self-perform projects, to give you an example, we owner operate all the mining equipment. The mining equipment is purchased in the beginning, and then we use our own fleet and our own employees to do all the mass excavation in the pit. We use the pre-strip material to help build the tailings dams and to also use it to cap roads. This is a great way to save on cost, but at the same time, it's also a great way to train your employees because the same individuals that have been driving the trucks for the 12 months during the construction period will be the same ones that will be driving the trucks when we're in operation next year. One part of our scope for the project is our power line. So we have, are in the process of building 193 kilometer transmission line that will connect to site. The total investment is about direct cost, $33 million. Overall cost with indirects, about $40-ish million. And at this point, we're 78% complete and on charge to energize the line in Q1. Out of the 483 towers, 456 foundations have been poured, and 349 towers have been lifted. This is probably the only scope of the project that we are not self-performing. What we've done is we have hired the local contractor from the state to help execute on this while actually delivering to them all of the materials and the equipment and also additional support as they need from our engineering business. What is important to note here that I mentioned earlier is this power line will be mostly powered by hydro. And at the same time, once this project is built, this project in terms of the power line, this becomes a state utility. So we will build it. And once it is done and energized, we will hand it back to the state, which will then provide power it and do all the transmission and also do the additional maintenance. As you can see here on the staffing front, we've been very busy, but a year ago we had 427 employees. At the end of August, we had 2,220 employees. We signed a collective bargaining agreement with the local union early in the year, which matched up very well with our feasibility study. And look, our philosophy corporately is you don't build a mine, you build a team that builds a mine. And the workforce in Brazil has been absolutely fantastic and a breath of fresh air compared to some of the projects that we've built in countries like Ecuador and Suriname that don't necessarily have many modern day mines. At this point, this is peak labor. And as we transition from construction into operation, it will drop down to about 650 employees full time. Safety is a big priority for us, especially with such a large workforce. To date, we've done about 2.8 million man hours, and we have no lost time incidents. And essentially a total reportable incidence frequency rate of about 0.36, which is below the industry average of 0.8. We tie our safety record as well as the ability to and delivering the project on time and on budget to our bonuses, not just corporately, but to all of the employees that we have on site. So if you do not have a safe site, you know, you don't have a good operation, you don't have a good build, but at the same time, this is a good way to incentivize everybody to focus on the right things. And here's the timeline. So as we mentioned, right now we're at the end of Q3. The critical path item for us is the grinding mills. Those items are coming from China. The last ones left port in the beginning of August and are scheduled to arrive in early November. At that point, this puts us in a good position to start hot commissioning in Q2, wet and dry commissioning early in Q1, and ramp up to commercial production in the second half next year. So in terms of our company corporately, as you can see at this point, we've got a market cap of about 380 million US, and we're fully funded to achieve commercial production. So we're trading effectively at an enterprise value of 266 million for a fully funded gold project that will be producing 175,000 ounces of gold starting next year. What you will notice in terms of our shareholder registry is that we have a pretty tightly held shareholder structure between La Mancha, El Dorado, and Franco Nevada. That's 53% of the shares. Insiders make up 8%. As insiders, we really see ourselves as owners more than management. We've invested over 17 million into the company. Every share that we've purchased, that we own, we have purchased, and insiders continue to buy even in today's market as the prices have really come down. At the same time, between insiders, strategic investors, and institutions, only about 7% of the company is held by retail and other investors. But this is our strategy. Our strategy is to acquire projects at the bottom of the Lassonde curve. As you know, the way that the market values these projects is at the bottom of the curve is really when you have the most amount of risk. It's really where the companies tend to trade at the lowest, but that also happens to be our sweet spot. We acquired the project in 2020 at 0.28 PNAV. And at this point, after 2-ish years, we've traded sort of near the top of the developer curve, trading at currently 0.52, while the rest of our peers are trading at 0.36. And what we're looking to do is spend, as we continue to execute on our project, start trading more in line towards the junior producers, a company like Lundin Gold, for example, whose project we did execute on a couple of years ago. What we wanted to do was really test the historical re-rate to see, okay, as companies transition from developers into producers, is there a significant re-rate? And what we did is we looked at a group of other companies that kind of went through that period, going from a single asset developer into a single asset producer over a period of 24 months. And on average, we found that shares returned about 112% above the GDXJ. So as of today, we're trading about, call it 40% above, and are roughly 11 months away from commercial production. So I believe we still have a lot of upside available in our shares. Year to date, it has been a very difficult market, but we find ourselves to be in a good spot. Overall, we're trading up 67% today. We were as high as about 100% earlier in the summer before the market started coming down, while the gold price has been relatively flat and the GDXJ traded down 10%. So if I can summarize it again, you know, this is sort of the story of G Mining Ventures. As I mentioned, we are a fully funded gold developer, and this is a platform to build the next intermediate gold producer. So the plan now is as we continue to execute on TZ to bring in a second asset, something in the company that can be, call it at least resource stage, but ideally that can be put into production by the end of 2025, which will then allow us to ramp up this project and then transition the construction team from one site to the other, while also using the cash flow from TZ to help fund the second project and rinse and repeat until we've built a company that is sort of in the intermediate gold producer stage. So now I'll kick it off with a couple of questions that I see here. What is your relationship with significant shareholders, La Mancha and Eldorado? That's a great question. La Mancha is a strategic investor of ours, and we speak with the company absolutely regularly, at least every week. I mean, I speak with a lot of the investment team probably a few times a week. They're extremely supportive, and they share our vision of helping to grow this company into an intermediate producer. If you're unfamiliar with La Mancha's background, La Mancha is a company that supported groups such as Endeavor Mining and Evolution, taking them from single assets into intermediate and major gold producers. So when we initially met with them and sold them on our vision, we told them that we will be your Endeavor Mining of the Americas, and they agreed, did a substantial amount of due diligence, and decided to support us. So at this point, we see them really as a partner, more than a shareholder. Eldorado Gold, we have a great relationship with them as well. As I mentioned, we acquired the project from them in about 2-ish years ago, and they were adamant about keeping as much equity in our company as possible. At the same time, they've told us that this is a financial investment for them. And eventually, as we do look to re-rate and our shares continue to increase, they will look to do an orderly exit. We do have placement rights if they're looking to sell the shares, where we have to have 15 business days to place those shares for them. So eventually, when they do decide to exit, at that point, I think that'll definitely be something that will be welcome for us, as we'll allow to hopefully generate a good return for them, but also increase the free float and the liquidity in our stock as we distribute those shares amongst a slew of different shareholders. Next question is, as why are you trading on a large premium to market? Well, I'm not sure what you necessarily mean by a large premium, but I mean, we're trading at about 0.52. Historically, developers traded at 0.52. I think that our ability to execute on our project has substantially de-risked us, and we've started to transition slowly from a developer towards a producer, as we're roughly 9 months away. We might be trading at a premium relative to some of the peers, but on a risk-adjusted basis, I think that we're still trading at a substantial discount, as developers, when they move to producers, typically trade between 0.8 and closer to 1x. And if we can execute on the project the same way we did for Lending Gold, ideally we can trade closer to 1.05x, like where they're trading. Following question. How do you achieve such a low ASIC for TZ, and is that cost advantage sustainable? That is a great question here. Let me just give you a real move it here to some of the scopes of the project. The cost estimates that we've put in place are from essentially February last year. Now, why are we able to achieve such a low all-in sustaining cash cost? Well, it's really several factors. One, the ore body is very favorable. As you can see here, it effectively comes to surface. So it's a low ore body. What comes to surface with a strong grade of 1.31. The strip ratio is actually relatively low as well. Life of mine, it is 3.4, but for the first 5 years, it is about 2.4 before we go to our final pushback, as this asset has three phases. We're owner-operated mining, so we've purchased all the equipment and operate and do it ourselves, so that, which removes the cost to typically go to contractors. And lastly, we are investing in the CapEx by building a power line rather than relying on gensets, which then gives us a very, increases our CapEx, but lowers our overall OpEx. I mean, we signed a power contract agreement with a local state power operator for the first 5 years. And we're looking to have, we're targeting basically with the FX about, call it 5 to 5.5, maybe up to 6 cents a kilowatt hour for power. So when you add in low power, relatively low strip, good grade, and also relatively soft rock, it really gives us a lower all-in sustaining cash cost. Now, some of the estimates, for example, have gone up and down. Prices of reagents have gone up, but the power contract is essentially 25% below our ASIC. Below what we had in our feasibility study. So overall, we feel pretty confident of being able to achieve the all-in sustaining cash cost that we have in our feasibility study. And the last question, What is the plan for GMIN after TZ is complete? Should investors think about this as a dividend pay play, or is the company looking to grow into multi-asset mid-tier company? That's a great question. So we are at this point a growth-focused company. The goal, as I mentioned earlier, is to have bring in a second asset and have that asset be construction ready by the end of 25. That way we can use the cash flow generated from TZ to essentially fund our growth and get us closer to that 500,000 ounce producer over the next 5 years. At that point, as after we've reached that status, well, then we will have to have an honest discussion with our shareholders and put our policy in place that essentially reflects their needs. Are we looking to continuously reinvest our cash flow into growth? Are we looking to pay a dividend? Or are we looking to do some type of blended capital returning program while also funding sustainable growth? I guess we'll cross that bridge once we get there. But as I mentioned, the goal for the next 5 years is to use this asset and to help launch this company into intermediate status, because we really feel that's where there's a gap in the market and where you can really trade at a premium valuation. And that's it. So